no idea when dev starts on this.
Oh, me neither. Is it now?
It can't be now. There's no way. Wait, it's coming up. Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Places. Places.
The history of film. At Batahooey, when the lights go dim. James Cagney to Nosferatu and stunts that shock you. And all the dirty tricks studios made. From Wings to Top Gun, movie stars and no ones. We're manic, crazy fans that leave no real a ton. Hollywood is film history in Hollywood. They chase the Oscar, but it's all a sham, just like Shaq and Kazam. All your dreams can come true. Film history, the history of film. All of it made for you.
Good God, that was terrible.
This is going to be a random shout out, and I'm so excited about this because this person listening right now has no idea that I'm about to shout them out. But I'm going to shout out VP Morris, an author who's a fan of the show, who's also a friend of Shelby's. And, yeah, shout out to you, VP. Thank you for listening. She said she listens to every episode.
Nice.
She's like a horror author. She's fucking cool as hell.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
We got some cool fans. We got some cool listeners, you know.
That's a kind of a consistent story. It's like the people who, like, listen to us are like, I listen to every episode. Like, that's cool. We got retention. Like,
that's very cool.
Our fans are our fans. We appreciate that. Shout out to TikTok user Fortunate Son for, once again, popping into my TikTok live. This time he popped in and he just typed in the comments, "Have you ever wanted to start your own podcast?" It took me a second. I was like, "Oh, that's my ad read."
That's awesome.
And so,
you ever wanted to start a podcast? My favorite part is you would think it's so complicated, and so did I, but now I don't.
Yeah,
because I'm anchor. Yeah.
I enjoyed recording that. But yeah, no, it was cool to kind of just like talk back and forth with him about film history and stuff. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess get some live feedback on some things, and he's loving it.
That's fucking awesome, dude. I love our listeners. Mm-hmm. Our listeners are very cool. We got a cool crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
My favorite thing was from the analytics from our podcast, and what we gathered really was that when people start to listen, they like stay listening. Like,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
fans. We have like a very large retainership, and like the ones that fuck with us hard, and that's dope.
Yeah,
we retain you.
Well, and speaking of fucking hard, speaking of fucking us hard, we're getting into part two, right?
Yeah.
Part two of Clara Bow. I don't know what part we were going into.
I tried my damnedest to split up the first one into two parts because I really didn't want to edit an hour and a half episode.
All good.
And there was no way to do it.
All good.
It was an hour and a half episode.
They
so.
Got a nice meaty chunk of Clara Bow.
Meaty chunk.
So we gotta and this
that,
one
the episode was fucking tragic.
Oh
that
my
was like
god.
Was
I'm glad you didn't cut it up
was
into
the
two.
Thing. If I had split it into two parts, part two would have just been burning and rape.
Yeah. That's what we would have named the episode. Burning and rape. Yeah, dude. No, I'm glad this was split up into two because today actually we're gonna get into like a lot happier shit.
Oh, cool.
Her life, the roller coaster's coming back up for this one, thank God.
Cool.
So, you know, life has its roller coasters, man. Sometimes you go way down, way down.
I think her roller coaster went off the tracks.
Yeah. Well, we're about to get back on the tracks. Things get more fun from here. Her childhood and teenage years weren't the best. But things get better now. So I got a surprise for you guys today. We're going to get a little blast from the past. Oh, wait. Oh, I hear him now. Come on in, Mr. Radio Man.
Oh my God.
The Radio Man.
I thought he was dead already.
It's been so long.
He's, resurrected,
you know,
from the grave.
Yeah, man. He's been dead. He's been alive. He's all over the place. Mr. Radio Man is back.
I can't tell if it's Mr. Radio Man or the ghost of Mr. Radio Man.
Last we left our hero, Clara Bow was born in Brooklyn. Clara Bow was born in Brooklyn in 1905 to a jobless, absent father and a mother who was certifiably cuckoo bananas. She grew up rough, moving around Brooklyn from hovel to hovel, watching her mom pay visits to the asylum and being stuck at home with her perv of a dad. When she was 16, she made a big splash at the Brewster Publications Motion Picture Magazine's Fame and Fortune Acting Competition, even landing a role in a small film. After her mother's passing, Clara dropped out of high school to pursue acting for real. And that's it. Thanks, Mr. Radio Man. I'm going to go back to my cave now. Thanks for having me again. Life is searing hell.
Why do you live in a cave, Mr. Radio Man?
Because life is searing hell.
Mr. Radio Man's inflection on perv of a dad was pretty fucking priceless.
Radio Man, Mr. Radio Man, man.
He's burning in the same pit that Clara Bow's friend was.
Yeah, man. And Mr. Radio Man is just the tortured artist, you know. Yeah. We pull him out when we need him. We made him an artist, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He was made into an artist. But that's where we are now, or more or less where we are. More like, when are we?
When are we?
This show is off the rails now. 1923 is where part two begins.
Ah, that's like this year, but long time ago.
That is this year, except for 100 years long time ago.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly 100 years long time ago. We've certainly discussed this year a time or two, but we're going to do it again here today. So,
roaring 20s.
The roaring 20s, baby. 2 years in. 2 years into the roar. It was just a baby, a baby lion, a cub, a lion cub. That's what I'm looking for.
What?
So there's a bunch of people in Victorian outfits doing drugs and fucking.
That's right.
Listen to jazz.
Yeah, hell yeah. The roaring 20s, baby. Warren G. Harding is president for most of the year until he dies of a heart attack, handing the seat to Calvin Coolidge. The real
Our coolest
20s.
President.
Yeah, man. He had cool in the name. He was a cool guy, baby.
What did Coolidge do? Dev, what was Coolidge famous for?
I don't remember. Probably fucking shit up. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he fucked shit up. Every time I make a joke on film history about someone being old, I say they partied with Calvin Coolidge.
I mean,
Yeah.
He did.
I don't remember you ever saying that.
Oh, maybe I've never said it here on air.
I don't think you ever said that.
I say it in life.
I've never heard you say that ever.
So email us at filmhistory@AOL.com if you've ever heard me say that.
Do you have Alzheimer's?
I can hear it.
Do you want to play with an octopus in VR? I've never heard you say anything about Calvin Coolidge
hey,
before.
Hey, man, look, we've talked about Calvin before.
I think you're making this up.
He put the cool in Coolidge, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
Dev's looking up Calvin Coolidge facts.
Yeah, he was named the Silent Cow.
Oh,
because
wow.
He had a dry sense of humor and a taciturn personality, according to the papers.
Those old taciturners, dude.
So, them old taciturners. So, Calvin Coolidge is president now. This was the year the King Tut burial chamber is opened. Unleashing the curses that would lead us to where we are now,
nice.
By the way.
Good. Yeah, yeah, that explains it.
That's where it all begins. 100 years ago, we unleashed King Tut, you know, and that explains where we are now. Dev, I thought you'd be interested in that.
I mean, yo, I've met him. He's not so bad, all right? Like, once you go check out the tomb and you can be like, I could see myself in here for a little bit. Yeah. There's nice art on the walls. You got all your favorite things around you.
Yeah.
You know, even if there's just pieces of them in jars, you got, like, your dog, but his heart's over there, his head's over there.
I kind of want pieces of me in jars when I die.
Yeah, old KT.
Old KT, man. Old Tut. The Tut, dude.
The Tut, dude.
99.1, The Tut.
Yeah,
up next, The Doors.
Frozen. I don't want to be like Disney and be frozen. I want to be mummified.
Yeah.
Either burn me on like a Viking on a raft in the ocean or mummify me.
Hell
and
yeah.
Put me in a tomb.
And I'm going to come back and slow walk that bitch. You
that
know
would
what I'm
be amazing.
Ugh.
As like a science project, our future highly evolved humans are just digging out monies and like these kids are like, we're going to reanimate this body and then you zoom back to life on the
I'll be the first mummy TikToker. Get famous as shit. The first home game is played at Yankee Stadium this year, with the Yankees taking on the Boston Red Sox. Damn. I'm going to die here on this podcast.
Should we
so this
concerned?
Is where
oh, no,
begins.
We're okay. Yep, this... Oh, it began a long time ago, brother. My death began the day I was born.
I meant the Yankees and Red Sox.
Oh, that's when the Yankees and Red Sox, that all began, yes. That's where the Yankees Red Sox thing began, and
but
also
death
my death.
Can begin, too.
Yeah, yeah. 1923 is also when Warner Brothers Studios begins production and is established on Sunset Boulevard. So this is the first days of Warner. That's where we're at. Yeah, man.
Wow.
This is when the bros.
Warner Brothers on Sunset?
Yeah, they opened it on Sunset originally.
Oh, when they move?
Oh, back in the day.
Long time ago.
At some point.
Yeah. So probably like the 40s or something. 30s yeah. or 40s.
It was something like
that. Between now and then.
I don't know if...
Within the last 100 years.
I think we discussed it long ago, but they had moved from Chicago because it was too cold to film movies there in the winter. Yeah, so they came out to L.A.
Had shitty weather. Yeah. They couldn't, not only that, but it was like cloudy and they couldn't get light right. And the rain.
And they were Polish.
And Edison was chasing them down the block.
Yes. Edison was pissed. They were running, you know.
It was cold.
It was cold.
They're like, let's go to Sunset.
Let's do Sunset Boulevard, baby. Let's hit the strip.
Sometime in the next 100 years, we'll move to Burbank.
They moved to Sun.
Cameras and just head out west.
They moved to Sunset so they could watch Motley Crue at the Viper Room, you know.
After Burbank was invented, they just moved up there.
They're like, oh, there's this new invention called Burbank. Let's get out there. Our death began at birth. This year, 1923, you can buy an electric sewing machine for $78.95.
That's so expensive in 1923.
Yes, through the old...
And how much is a car? $1,000?
Yeah, exactly. It's about... Or not even that, really. Through the old inflation calculator, $78.95 is $1,200.
Whoa!
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And they had inflation in the 20s.
That's wild, dude.
Yeah, dude.
That'd be like buying a computer, dude.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, you got to get them women sewing. You know what I'm saying? Get them in there patching up my work shirt. You know what I'm saying?
Electric sewers.
You'd spend more than that on Alan Turing's sex computer. The world's first domestic refrigerator is sold in Sweden, and the world's first portable radio is developed in the U.S.
I prefer the foreign refrigerators.
Yeah. The Swedish fridges. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man.
They're just so much more comfortable on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. For Dahmer?
The steering wheel's on the other side of the fridge, though.
Yeah.
How did those cops not see the heads in his fridge and the dick? He had dicks in his fridge.
Well.
I hope he had a Swedish fridge to keep those dicks cold. You know what I'm saying?
American
Who?
Fridge
Who?
Gonna fail
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Never heard of him. The Netflix show?
He partied with Calvin Coolidge. I've made that joke here plenty of times.
Are we in the Twilight Zone?
Yeah, this has gone off the rails. But most importantly to our story today, 1923 is the year that Clara Bow, she's 18 years old, and as Radio Man, depressed-ass Radio Man told us earlier, she had competed in the Fame and Fortune contest a few years ago and made a big impression as an actress.
Mm.
And you remember, her father told her she should be knocking on doors of agencies mm-hmm. and studios, pounding the pavement type mm-hmm. of approach.
Mm-hmm.
According to Clara, so she was doing that. This was the year. She was 18. She was fucking knocking on doors. She's like,
back when apply in person was relevant, advice.
Yes. And this is what I was talking about, too. Yeah. I wish there was a fucking Fame and Fortune contest nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there sort of is, but, you know, it would be you.
It's
and...
called, like, fucking TikTok.
It's called Instagram.
Yeah.
Be hot on Instagram.
Yeah, but it's not 30 of, like, you know, your toe-headed fucking locals, local yokels coming to audition. Now you got a million cute little, you know, TikTok fucks.
Hey, you know, that's the world.
That's the world, baby. Living. Keep L-I-V-I-N.
We got more people. This is keep us inflating the population.
Yeah.
25-year-old swimsuit model bearded lady.
That's right. Exactly. That was the competition back then. You think Clara Bow would be a famous TikToker now?
Well, I don't know. She couldn't make it in the talkies, right?
She made the talkies.
Okay, yeah.
She did a few talkies.
I feel
talkies.
Like she would be a YouTuber more than a TikToker.
Yeah, she'd probably do YouTube.
Because she would just... I feel like she would just want to go around and just be badass and people follow her and watch her life.
Honestly, not even... No shade, no tea, no lemonade, whatever. She'd probably be on Pornhub. She was a very sexual person.
Oh, OnlyFans, yeah.
Yeah, she would do OnlyFans.
She'd definitely have an OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Pornhub was like, she ain't giving that away for free.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be OnlyFans.
She'd be Tana Mojo.
Yeah.
No, her dad would be the one answering and replying to all the guys' messages.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, we found her modern day surrogate.
Yes.
Tana Mojo, congratulations. You're the Clara Bow of our day.
So according to Clara, she's knocking on doors. She's doing her thing. It's 1923. She said there was always something. I was too young or too little or too fat. Usually, I was too fat.
Really?
Yeah, this started even back then.
What?
You had to be a fucking little beanpole to be an actor. You know what I'm saying?
Be a beanpole?
You had to be a twig. Mm. Yeah, even back then, man. They were telling us
just
too
fat. They
had to
wear so much clothing that it already added like pounds and weight and like thickness, so... What? The smaller you are, the more normal you look in those clothes.
Yeah,
you know?
And I'm thinking about it, like, she's 18, she grew up in Brooklyn, very rough fucking life, very poor. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would imagine she weighed all of, like, 95 pounds, you know? And they were like,
that's crazy. What do they expect? What do they want?
They're like, we can see your cheekbones, but we want to see some actual skull.
Hey,
there,
if I can't see your ribs.
Too fat. Get out of here. I want to be able to play your ribs like a washboard. You know, like,
have you ever heard of a xylophone?
Yeah, your ribs need to be xylophone size, and then get back in here. Bring in the money man. He wants to play the xylophone on Clara. So her luck changed.
Maybe we should just cut all of that.
Can we have money man t-shirts?
Yeah, we need money man t-shirts. Yeah, bringing the money man needs to go in the theme song for sure. Her luck all changed when actor-turned-director Elmer Clifton came along. So this guy was in a few big movies. He was an actor back in the day. He was in movies like Birth of a Nation, if you remember. The big KKK movie.
What'd he play in that?
I wonder how much FaceTime he actually got in that, or if it was all covered up by a hood most of the time, you know?
Did he bring his own costume to set?
And every time I mention this movie, I will mention once again, Griffith Park absolutely was named after D.W. Griffith. You can't convince me otherwise, even though they say it wasn't.
It was a different Griffith.
No, man, there's no way. That man created
no way.
This town.
Hollywood Land.
We already went down this.
I know, and I don't believe
road.
It. It's revisionist
it's
history.
A different Griffith.
Revisionist history.
History is written by the victor. And in this case,
that's right.
Another Griffith.
We here on Film History, the History of Film, believe that Griffith Park was named after the one and only racist D.W. Griffith that made Birth of a Nation, and that they covered it up in history and made it look like that other Griffith guy.
So you're telling me that the place right next to Griffith Park called Hollywood Land with the sign that was a white-only subdivision built on the top of the hills to get away from the riffraff of Los Angeles... had nothing to do with Griffith next door. If I were a homeowners association in the old Hollywood Land, and we were trying to decide what to name the park right next to us, I think a racist white supremacist who's in the film industry.
It might as well have been called Holly White.
Yeah.
But this Griffith predates that Griffith.
Hey, man, look.
It was Griffith Jenkins Griffith.
Griffith Jenkins Griffith. Yeah, right.
It was Griffith Jenkins Griffith. He was born in 1850.
He had Griffith in his name twice.
He died in 1990.
This man was double Griffith. This man was Griffith squared. There's no way.
They just made this person up as the fungi.
He died in 1919.
Well, hey, what was the real guy's name? Oh, it was Griffith. Griffith Griffith. Oh, yeah, okay. Sure. That makes sense.
That's a real person.
Yeah, Griffith Lamp.
He was a Welsh-born American industrialist and philanthropist.
He was a fictional character in the novel of Hollywood.
This is how you know they're fucking with us, just by naming it Griffith Griffith.
Does this man look made up to you?
Damn, that's a real man. That man, that mustache is real. That's for damn sure. That mustache goes for days.
Does that look
that
like
that mustache?
That looks like way too clear of a picture for being 1890.
They took that in 1996.
That's like made with like a DSLR. Look how fucking high def that old
they
time
took that in
picture.
1996.
That is an AI generated image. I don't believe anything in the world anymore.
Both sides of his mustache are named Griffith, and there's the G in the middle of it.
After amassing a significant fortune from a mining syndicate in the late 1880s.
Oh, my God. Well, look, he was probably just as bad anyway.
Yeah, this guy sounds like a gem.
Yeah.
He donated 3,000 acres to the city of Los Angeles, which became Griffith Park, and he bequeathed the money to build the park, its Greek theater, and Griffith Observatory.
Okay.
Griffith's
and
legacy.
Then his son, D.W.
When you bequeath money, you're an asshole. Yeah. Why, you can't just donate it?
It's just money laundering.
You have to bequeath.
The last sentence of this is amazing.
Oh my my God, let's hear it.
Griffith's legacy was marred by his notorious shooting of his wife in 1903. A crime in which he served a year and 9 months in prison for.
This is what happens when you give a fucking park to the city.
That's exactly right. And this is the thing. This is the thing. This is the lesson of the day, kids. Go digging into any of these people's history, and it will turn out bad. It doesn't matter who named the park. It was a bad fucking person. That's how it's always going to go. If the park was named after them, Griffith Park, Central Park, Mr. Central was probably a fucking rapist. If a park is named after a person, that person was a cannibal who raped children. And that's all there is to it.
So it wasn't named after the racist man. It was named after the domestic abuser.
Okay, that's much better.
A year and 9 months is not a lot of time
not
for
a lot of
shooting
times.
Your wife.
She was crazy.
But did she die?
Crazy. I don't know.
She just got shot.
That's very true. You seem to back then you didn't die from gunshots. It was more like malaria.
I'll do some digging.
Oh my God.
I'll come with more receipts
fantastic.
In the next episode.
I'm so glad that you brought that
up. Griffith Griffith.
Okay. I will from now on I'll credit the park to Griffith G J Griffith.
The woman shooter.
So
the woman shooting mustachio.
Named after the horrible woman shooter mining tycoon.
I would also
to the place that's the racist.
I would
summer.
Also love all this. Right. I would also love this if the revisionist history guy was like, "All right, we're gonna change the we're gonna tell people from now on that it was named after this one guy," and then he names the whole thing after this one guy. And he's like, "Fuck, that guy shot his wife. Damn it." He's like, "Do you want the KKK guy or the wife shooter?"
Do we have another Griffith in the tank,
Peter? From Family Guy. That's what, in 20 years, they're going to be like, no, this park was named after Peter Griffith from Family Guy. Oh, my God.
Whew. Oh, my kidneys hurt.
Glad we got to the bottom of that. Anyway, this guy Elmer Clifton, he's in Birth of a Nation.
They should put a plaque and a statue up at the observatory for this dude.
For Griffith J.
Gun
Griffith.
In hand.
The mustache.
Just like frozen and the wife's terrified.
They just need a bronze bust of his mustache. Man, that mustache was amazing. I'm sure.
I'm
I don't know how he even shot his
fake.
Wife. How did he get the gun
that...
around his mustache to shoot his wife?
I don't believe that picture.
I don't believe
it's a really clear picture.
It's super fucking clear. I'm telling you.
It's clear.
This dude died in 1917 or some shit, right?
Yeah.
They didn't have fucking cameras that good
it's
then.
It's clear, man.
And he's clearly
but
not
look,
as
dude,
old as when he died.
That was film, baby. That was 32 millimeter right there. You know what I'm saying?
That is bullshit is what that is. That is.
That's a community actor from Melrose from 1996.
Bro, I've seen this guy do background work. This is not real.
They're
he like, central casting on
they're
it.
Like, all right, we need to clean out the image of Griffith Park, but if we make it too clean,
yeah,
they'll
we
suspect
gotta give him something.
Suspect something.
Somebody's like, oh, he shot his wife.
And gave everyone black lung. Perfect. Run with
perfect.
It.
Perfect. Run with that. It's better than the KKK. But that's what this guy did. He did a KKK movie, Elmer Clifton. he was a part of the real deal, Griffith.
He's an OG Griff.
He's an OG Griff. He was not part of Griffith Griffith. He was a part of DW, who made the whole KKK movie, Birth of a Nation. But this guy now, he was like, you know what? Maybe I should get behind them cameras. Maybe I should start directing my own KKK movies. So he made a career change, which is kind of interesting. He's like, all right, I'm done being in front of the camera now that I played that KKK dude.
I'm not really getting too many auditions anymore. I feel I'm being typecast, and I really don't like it.
People wonder why, when I played a Nazi in War Pigs, I became a writer afterwards. You know? So Elmer's making a career change. He's behind the cameras. He's directing. He's producing. And he's getting up and running on this new film about whalers in Massachusetts. Mm. And it was this, like, it was really cool, actually. Mm. It's 1920s. It's, like, half scripted. So he had a script in mind about whalers in Massachusetts. But when he got there, he used real fucking whalers to be in this movie. This is a silent film. No one's saying shit, you know, so.
Still sounds like a bad idea.
It was also, apparently, hellacious to shoot. Very cold. But he's filming this movie about whalers, and there's a character in the movie. She's like this tomboy. Her dad's a whaler, and she wants to be a whaler. But mm-hmm. it's 1923, and it's a silent picture, mm-hmm. so it's all about, like, you're a woman. You can't be a whaler, you know? Women don't do that shit.
Women don't whale.
Women don't whale. Women don't whale.
They whale in a different way.
They get whaled on in the 1920s, yeah. That's for sure. If you want to be a movie star, that is.
Oh, they whale in good ways, and they whale in bad ways. In the whale in bad ways, they get whaled on.
So there's this tomboy role where, you know, this girl wants to be a whaler like her dad, and he's looking for this type of woman. He's looking for this type of actress. I need someone who's, like, beautiful, but also sort of boyish, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And pretty taboo at the time, but also not really. Mm-hmm. This is pre-code. Mm-hmm. This is still the 1920s. This is when we were fucking letting that shit fly. You were letting your freak flag fly.
I need a lady that can slaughter a whale and harvest its blubber in the freezing cold waters of North New England.
That's right. I need a woman who can throw a spear at a whale, but with red lipstick on.
I need a woman who wants to do the worst possible job in existence.
yeah, killing whales. But she's like a bad person, but she's still pretty, you know? Yeah, we need that girl.
But it's like I just get away with what is this narrative of this woman who aspires to do, like, this terrible job?
Oh man, it was the 20s.
It would be like, oh man,
what terrible!
I wish I could go into the coal mines. It's like, why do you want that? Why do you wish that?
Like daddy, yeah.
Like
it's like, I love when dad throws that spear at the whale and the life goes out of its eyes. You know, I want to feel that. I want to feel taking the life away from a giant. A giant majestic creature is what I was going for. I don't know if they're domestic. I don't think you can domesticate a whale.
It's the years of domestic abuse as a child allowed her to channel this character into fits of rage and wondering, where does that darkness in you come from? Like, playing this part very accurately.
Yeah.
But it's like you realize the men don't want to be doing this. They have to do it. You know what I mean? It's like no one wants to be a whaler.
But she wanted to
That's
do
not
it too.
True. Kat Mayhap really wanted to be a whaler.
That's
he
true,
wanted
man.
To do a shit.
Hemingway, too.
Yeah.
But so Clifton, he's getting this movie off the ground, and it's like his baby, and he sees Clarabeau's picture in that fucking Motion Pictures magazine.
Mm.
He sees the pictures from the competition. Mm. He's like, after I take this to the bathroom for a while, I got to talk to some people, you know.
you mean the outhouse behind the shed, really?
yeah. There was no plumbing. The cum just sat in the toilet, you know, and you just had to pee around it. That should be on a t-shirt.
It's just come all over in the walls, like marking his territory. It's just dried.
That's how they hung pictures. That's how they hung posters around
the
bathroom.
The past was such trash.
I know, man. I know. I
hate the past.
The past was terrible. So he sees her picture in this magazine. And so he contacts the magazine. He's like, who the fuck is this girl, man? Like, I got to have this girl for my whale movie, you know? And he talks to, I'm looking for this girl for the whale thing. And the editor that he spoke to at the magazine happened to have been one of the fucking judges that day at the competition.
Oh, I remember that whale girl.
Yeah. That girl would be perfect for a whale movie, you know? I remember that whale dog woman.
Oh, you mean this dog woman?
This dog woman. She's way boyish, I just want you to know. Like, way tomboyish. And we're talking about, like, a girl probably, like, I don't know, she liked to, like, you know, carve wood.
Yeah.
That woman will never marry, you know.
She climbed a tree once.
As you remember, her mother, her crazy ass mom, was totally against her being an actress back when she was alive. Dad's all for it. But she borrowed her mom's dress to go in for this screen test for Clifton for this whale movie. And bada bing, bada boom, she fucking got it. You know what I'm saying? She got the part. She got the whale woman. She gets the whale woman. He offers her $35 a week, which she countered. She's like, no. If you want me for this whale thing, it's $50 a week. And he agrees.
Oh, wow.
Through the old inflation calculator, he offered her $600 a week initially. She countered for about $850. And he agreed. So she's making $850 a week to do this whale movie now.
I love how, like, her first movie she's fucking counter-offering.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Already out the gate. Yeah. So he's like, you know what to expect when put the word on the street to Hollywood. This is what you expect to be dealing with me.
Yeah. She's a fucking hustler from Brooklyn. She goes in. She's like, if you want the whale woman, it's me, a nobody.
I can also, like, imagine her at some dive bar in Hollywood just wasted, being like a decade later, being like, you know how I got my start? Killing whales.
Killing whales. Yeah, man, and imagine, he offered her $600 a week, inflation-wise. Mm-hmm. That's like, yeah, imagine being broke, 18-year-old, mm-hmm. fucking, like...
How many weeks did it say?
It was...
Probably like a six-week shoot or something?
They shot from September 1922, and it went into distribution on March 4th, 1923. I don't know if I have exactly how long it took.
6 weeks sounds about right.
Yeah.
Silent film.
6 weeks. Yeah.
All pretty on logistics.
She made good money. She made some good money. You know, especially.
It might have been the naivete that kind of like gave her the courage to do that, because like she hadn't at this point faced countless rejections. You know what I mean? So like she hadn't gotten like kind of beaten down to the point where like, fuck, I'll take anything.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my god, I'm 18. I'm already getting my first role. Like, well, that's. Fucking ask for more money, you know what I mean?
Ask for more, baby. Yeah. And all right, look.
You want me risking my ass killing whales? I wonder if they actually did like use practical effects and kill some whales.
Oh, of course. There's no rules. There's no laws here.
And
there's
look,
no laws yet.
I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna put it out there. I don't know. No one knows. But listen.
She fucked that whale?
Tis the time. Yeah. Yes. She might have fucked the whale to get that salary for this movie. There's no telling. There's no telling if she did or not. Mm-hmm. But this was the time.
Yeah,
and she was not shy.
You're right
about
right.
having sex with people.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not saying she did.
Yeah.
I'm saying that D.W. Griffith. The park was named after him. Certainly. But there's no certainty to whether or not she did this for the role. But you know, there's some evidence there. Who knows?
Sure. Yeah. It could be. Yeah.
Anyway, just put it out there.
Yeah.
So the movie's called Down to the Sea in Ships.
She had negotiating power.
That's right. Yeah. She had some negotiating power. Mm-hmm. Yes. And Down to the Sea in Ships was shot on location in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and produced by independent The Whaling Film Corporation. The Whaling Film Corporation was the money behind this thing. So you know how the military paid for wings?
Yeah.
Whales paid for this.
The killing of whales.
Yeah. Murdered whales. Yeah.
It wasn't like happy whales enjoying their lives.
They're just pulling out their big wallet out of their whale pocket. No, it was like whale carcasses paid for this thing.
Paid for in blubber.
Blood money. Blubber money.
Blubber money. This movie was paid for by blubber money. And the movie documented life, love, and work in the whale hunter community.
Life, love, and whaling.
Life, love, and blubber. The production relied on a few less-known actors and local talents, and it premiered at the Olympia Theater in New Bedford on September 25th.
The Olympia.
It went on general distribution on March 4th, 1923, and Bo was billed 10th in the film. So she's fucking 10th on the roster, small role, but, you know, she's in there. But she is the one who, like, stood out. Everybody's like, I like the whale girl. Like, she was only in there for a second, but God damn it, she fucking stood out. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, guys, you know that second supporting actor?
Yeah, yes.
Supporting co-actor?
And it's happened.
Yeah.
It's happened in modern
movies,
too.
She really stole the show.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to think, like, right off the top of my head, somebody who was in a movie for, like, a second. And then, you know what? I'll say it. Damn it. What's her face? What's her name? Wait, I'm going to remember it here in a second. The one, she was in Twilight, and then she did the, now she's, like, huge. She did that George Clooney movie where he had to fire people.
Anna Kendrick
was a small part in Twilight, and I swear, dude, her career now is like huge. From
she was a musical actress before.
That's right.
So she did like theater stuff, and was like her first bigger movie.
Gotcha.
And then it was all the Pitch Perfect stuff and all that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
I know, man. Somebody who was like in a scene who became huge from it.
Something will come to my brain. I mean, I'm sure that's almost every actor. We just didn't notice the small bit.
Yeah, that's true.
We didn't notice
Brad Pitt was in the background of
Lesson
Zero. Terry Crews.
Yeah, Training Day.
Training Day. He clapped for the birds. Yeah. He didn't even say anything.
He was a bodyguard on set.
Yeah, that's right.
He was
right.
Ice Cube's bodyguard for on set in his trailer. And he was like, yo, you want to be in this scene? And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, hell
whoa,
yeah.
Whoa, cool.
Yep, that's right. So, yeah, she's getting shit written about her. She's like 10th build, and she's getting shit written about her. There are things like, Miss Bo will undoubtedly gain fame as a screen comedian, and she scored a tremendous hit in Down to the Sea and Ships and has reached the front rank of motion picture principal players. Like, overnight.
Hmm.
With her beauty, her brains, her personality, and her genuine acting ability, it should not be many moons before she enjoys stardom in the fullest sense of the word. You must see Down to the Sea and Ships. And yeah, she stole this fucking picture. She blew up. Literally overnight sensation type of shit. Like, people are fucking going nuts over this girl now. Clara Bow is now a star.
Nice.
From, you know, boom, from the get. She's like Timothy Chalamet, you know, bringing the money. This thing came out in March, and by mid-December, Clara was being awarded the Western Association of Motion Pictures Advertisers, or WAMPAs, Baby Star Award.
That's not a real thing.
WAMPAs Baby Star. That is what this was called.
They couldn't have taken themselves seriously. Yo, aren't you excited? You're winning a WAMPA.
You're getting a WAMPA Baby Star.
Woo!
Woo-hoo!
You're a WAMPA now.
You're a WAMPA, baby.
And yo, WAMPA, Harry.
Yo,
WAMPA, Harry.
Have the privilege of being in the WAMPA Club.
I don't know if you know this, but I won a WAMPA. So she's up for this WAMPA Baby Award, Baby Star Award. This was a promotional campaign that ran from 1922 to 1934 when it undoubtedly got shut down for, you know, horrendous things. but they honored 13 young actresses each year whom they believed to be on the threshold of movie stardom. This hot kid's about to be a movie star.
The hot kids award.
The hot kid award. The hot baby award is basically what they called it. The baby star. Notable stars that received the baby star award from the WAMPAs included Clara Bow, Janet Gaynor, Faye Ray, Dolores Del Rio, Mary Astor, Joan Crawford, Loretta Young, Gene Author, Ginger Rogers, and CAG's favorite co-star, Joan Blondell. Oh. All those women at some point were WAMPAs.
Won the Hot Child Award.
They were one of the Hot Children Awards. That's right. That's where they began. I remember my career began when I won the Hot Baby
this
Award.
This sounds like the most inappropriate award ever.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's like, well, if you remember,
you young girl, you got WAMPAs now.
You're a WAMPA now.
Come to Hollywood.
Well, if you remember when Clara Bow won the Fame and Fortune Award, they gave her like a fucking lingerie kit when she was like 15. You know?
Yeah.
So she just went from that to the WAMPAs Hot Baby Awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonder why they were all so sexual back then. In the spring of 1923, now she's wampified. Now she's like fucking, you know, she's a hot baby wampa. So
in the House of Womp.
In the House of Womp. Yeah. So she is
also two great band names.
The House of Womp, Baby
Hot
Womp.
Hot Baby Wampa.
Hot Baby Wampa. I loved Hot Baby Wampa when they used to play the House of Blues.
I know.
They closed that place
down.
That
sounds
man.
Like a 90s like zoot yeah. suit band.
They were the last band to play the House of Blues before they closed it down. The Hot Baby Wampa.
Hot Baby Wampa.
In the spring of 1923, she gets a part in a movie called The Daring Years, a real uplifting film about a guy going to prison after being suspected of murdering his girlfriend's married boxer boyfriend.
Wait.
He murders his girlfriend's married boxer boyfriend.
So she was married to the boxer?
No,
he was married.
The boxer was married.
But dating his girlfriend.
Dating his girlfriend. He's getting cucked by a married boxer.
That's, wow,
yeah,
the layers.
1923, baby.
This is a silent film?
It was a silent
How
film.
How did we convey all this information?
Had to be a lot of text on cards.
There is so much happening.
Just a lot of tongue and throat.
This is so pre-code. They're like,
so
let's
pre-code,
have let's have four affairs in one movie.
Yes, yeah.
Like, all affairs, the movie.
And then it was just a title card that was like, but you're a married boxer, and I have a boyfriend, you know. So she does that movie. While filming The Daring Years, she made friends with legendary actress Mary Carr. And she was like a, at the time, she was, I mean, I don't know who to compare her to, like a fucking Meryl Streep of the silent film industry, you know? And Mary Carr, if you remember, these were the days there were no makeup artists on set. You're doing your own fucking makeup when you would come to set.
That's,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. And Mary Carr taught Clara how to do her makeup. She was like, if you're going to be in the fucking big leagues, you got to stop with this circus shit that you do to your face, you know? Mm-hmm. We got to show you how to be a star around here. And then she would go and, like, find a man to come punch her in the face and give her a black eye, because that's what all the women in the movies look like, because the men were punching them so much, you know? And so, like, that was how you did it.
Do you want to learn how to put a black eye on with makeup?
Nah.
I'm pure method,
make
baby.
Make it real, baby. Just get one of those drunk actors over there who wants to sign a Warner Brothers contract. They're a brand new studio on Sunset Boulevard. They're already beating women over there. So she teaches her how to do her own makeup, and this sort of, like, elevates her career. This was like the missing puzzle piece here, you know? Now,
wait. Does she not already know how to do her makeup?
She did, but not like the stars do it. That was the thing, man. Like, you'd show up to set, and like I said, there's no makeup artist. You're doing your own shit. And, I mean, they might tell you, like, that doesn't really look very good. But, I mean, there's only so much you can fucking do if you don't know how to do your makeup, you know? And you're doing your own thing. It's like, it's one of those things that you bring to set. It's one of those skill sets. Yeah. It's like, it's a tool of the trade, you know? Like, if you know how to do your own makeup and look like the other stars in the movie, that is like,
yeah. I mean, I guess her nutso banana's mom never probably taught her.
Do you remember she had like a year of lucidity where she like cut her hair,
right?
You know?
Yeah. There's no YouTube tutorial.
No,
so
the only makeup her mom was doing was writing lipstick messages on a mirror, like how fucking crazy she was, you know? She didn't know how to put that shit on her daughter, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But so this is where she learned. That was where she learned, was doing this movie. And after that, she does The Daring Years. After that, in the spring, she books a movie for the summer written by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Why do you want to fuck Scott Fitzgerald?
One of the... No, wait, what?
Why are you saying fuck Scott Fitzgerald?
That was good. That was good. I like that. I like this guy.
Fitzgerald.
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Why are you saying fuck him?
You know about F.
What'd
Scott
he ever
Fitzgerald,
do?
Right?
Yeah, I know. It's a Ted joke. Yeah. Like, it's verbatim just ripped out of Ted.
I love that.
The little teddy bear. He's like, why you want to fuck Scott Fitzgerald? What'd he do to you?
So she books a movie for the summer written by Fuck Scott Fitzgerald called Grit, about juvenile crime. And this was another tomboy role for her. So, at this point, she is sort of finding this niche. Like, people want tomboys. It is a time where people... There's a lot to be said about, like, you know, this is pre-code. This is pre-women weren't being, like, fucking shut out and shut up yet. Women had a voice, and they were talking about shit. And one of those things is, I'm not exactly Miss, you know, feminine woman. You know,
it's, you know, it'd be really controversial. Take a girl, dress her like a boy.
Exactly.
Pushing the envelope, brother.
Pushing the envelope,
we're
dude.
We're going places that they don't want us to go,
yeah,
man.
Dude, this woman's wearing pants in my movie. Yeah. We're like, bro, fuck Scott Fitzgerald. They're gonna kill you for that. You know? He's like, nah, dude, just wait. It's called Grit.
Where my name isn't Fuck.
Where my name ain't Fuck. They didn't name me Fuck for nothing. That's F. Scott Fitzgerald's real first name, is just Fuck. His parents are just like, let's give this kid a fucking head start, baby.
Fuck Scott Fitzgerald.
Fuck Scott Fitzgerald. When we do the episode about him, we're going to talk about Fuck Scott Fitzgerald.
Okay, wait. Oh, is this F. Scott getting his own
episode? Man, absolutely. That
I didn't know he was
all over the place.
I didn't know he was a movie man.
He was a movie man.
I thought he was just the guy who wrote Great Gatsby.
No, so he wrote The Great Gatsby, and then there was a time in the 20s where these silent films were like, there's a lot of writing in these movies that comes up on the screen. We should get people who do this shit, you know? And so, like, they got a lot of novelists, like F. Scott Fitzgerald, some other people that I can't name off the top of my head because I'm not that smart, but other novelists who they were making movies, you know? And they would sit at fucking Musso and Frank's, I shit you not, Fuck Scott Fitzgerald used to sit at Musso and Frank's, and he would adapt his novels into scripts, and he would go behind the bar and make his own drinks. That was like his whole thing. He would be like, fuck you, you can't
make my
drink. That
would be so funny to have like famous writers do the cards for different movies, because it would be so in their style.
Yes,
like
yeah.
Like an Edgar Allan Poe card where it's just talking about birds and death. And
pretty
then,
much, man. That was
super dark written cards. Hemingway, super long-winded. You gotta have a lot of cards.
The card is like a scroll of a fucking card for Hemingway.
Let's do the Fuck Scott Fitzgerald
episode.
Let's do
the Fuck Scott Fitzgerald episode. I'll tell you about Fuck. That man, he was fucking awesome, old Fuck. My name ain't Fuck, baby. She's finding this niche. She is the unladylike tomboy, but hot. You know, that's like her thing. And it was like the thing that sort of would keep you from getting roles as a woman. She was finding out how to get a role that way, you know, and she just found all the ones that fit her. And she certainly had no fucking problem finding work once she got going with that shit. So the director of Grit, not Fuck wrote it, but the director, this dude, we've mentioned him once or twice, Frank Tuttle. He was a legendary silent film director. And she went on to work after Grit. She went on to work with this guy like 5 times and 5 other things throughout her like big career, you know. And he spoke about directing Clara. He said her emotions were close to the surface. She could cry on demand, opening the floodgate of tears as soon as I asked her to weep. She was dynamite, full of nervous energy and vitality, and pitifully eager to please everyone. And so that was like. And that kind of makes sense. Like, if you listen to part one, you know, you won't be shocked that Clara was on the verge of tears all the time.
She could cry on demand, almost like she had this terrible memory of her friend on fire in front of her eyes.
Yeah, it was like, I don't think she was crying on demand. I think she was not crying on demand. You know what I mean? It was like, she was finding the times not to cry, and she was just letting it out in the right moments, you know? She was kind of just in a 24-hour cry cycle, you know, from her life. It was really the space betweens that she was looking for.
I love the image of just somebody crying all day, every day, and her acting is not crying and turning it off.
It's sort of like my life, to be honest. I'm just acting.
I'm only crying on the inside.
Yeah. I cry a lot. My tear ducts are they're out. You know,
that's right. They're dried up from the cigarettes.
That's right. My tear ducts dried up from the cigarettes. I started death at birth.
I'm dehydrated.
That's why I drink so much water. It's tear juice.
It's a little trick I learned from old Fuck.
That's right. Old Fuck taught me to drink water so I can refill my tear ducts. Because I'm just constantly crying. So while working on Grit in 1923, Clara met her first boyfriend, a cameraman named Arthur Jacobson, who this guy later on became like a big AD. Yeah, and then a full director, actually. And he shot some westerns like Home on the Range later on in life. But right now, 1923, he's just this little camera guy and Clara, the new big star, sort of like Margot Robbie marrying that PA.
Yeah.
And Margot Robbie playing in Babylon.
Yeah.
Clara Bow, exactly. So yeah. Just Margot Robbie. Clara Bow is just Margot
Robbie. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yep. Yeah.
That's what this is. Mm-hmm. She's that OnlyFans girl that you mentioned earlier, Tana Monog or whatever, Tana Mowgli. So she meets this boyfriend, and you know, so far this has all been in New York. This has been a New York tale this whole time. This whole time you've been in the Big Apple, by the way. She is, and you know, this is sort of per that time period. I mean, when you were doing silent films back in those days, you would sort of stay local because that was, you know, I mean, it was fucking 1923. What are you gonna fucking hop on a plane and go to LA and call your agent on the AOL?
Fat chance.
You know, fat fucking chance. You're not gonna MySpace your fucking manager. Yeah,
how would you communicate?
There was no communication back then. She's sending a fucking message in a bottle.
Birds don't fly that fast. Yeah. You can get that in 4 to 8 business months.
She put her headshot in a bottle and put it in the ocean, and it finally reached LA, you know?
There's definitely radio and cable and telephones.
That's for rich folks, which I guess she is making a good deal of money by now. She's still, I'm sure she's still like...
Those birds get lost.
Yeah,
you know?
Birds get lost. My headshot's in a bottle. It just hasn't reached yet, you know? I gave my resume to a bunch of pirates to go deliver to LA, you know?
The bird ate the message.
He got hungry on the way. Little fucker. I gave him some cigarettes to smoke. smoked, but he still had an appetite. So this has all been in New York, you know, except for the Wailing movie. She filmed in Massachusetts, but she got cast in New York for the Whale Girl, you know. So she's filming Grit in Astoria, New York at Pyramid Studios, kind of a big studio at the time-ish. So far she's had a New York-based film career, but not for long. Because Hollywood, baby. Hollywood's coming to call.
Hollywood comes a knocking.
A visitor came to Pyramid Studios, a man by the name of Jack Bachman.
What's old Jack's deal?
Jack, he was a bigwig over in Hollyweird at Preferred Pictures.
Preferred?
Preferred Pictures.
What happened to them?
They were an independent studio that had broken away from Paramount.
Oh.
This was like...
How'd that work out for him?
It didn't. Well, it worked out-ish for a while. Until it didn't. Until they got like absorbed into other people. But you know, we can only have five big studios here. There's only room for that. But Preferred Pictures, it was like this fucking like rogue studio who had broken away from Paramount.
We're doing what we want.
Yeah, we do what we want, baby. We're gonna get this wailing tomboy and make her a star. You know what I mean? From New York. And he came to visit set. And he was here to talk to Clara about a contract with Preferred Pictures. They wanted to fly her out to L.A. and put her in an apartment for 3 months on a $50 a week contract, which, again, that's like $800 a week, just to see how things go, basically. It was like, you know, on probation, we're going to do this thing, we're going to test it out, see how it goes. And we're going to put you up in an apartment, pay for the plane, and the plane's going to be a tin can with a bunch of wicker seats and no seat belts. But you are going to get to Hollywood at some point. You
know? It is just a giant bird.
It's just a giant bird. Yeah. You're going to hop on the back of an albatross and fly to Los Angeles. You know, we gave the albatross some cigarettes for on the way, and you guys got to split them.
Just don't fall asleep and make sure the albatross doesn't fall asleep either.
Don't fall asleep. If the pilot falls asleep, maybe shake him a few times because he is very drunk. You know, it is the 1920s. So you definitely...
Here's some seed. Use it, ration it out throughout the trip.
And if anybody gets tired, here's some cocaine in a bottle.
Yeah, here's some cocaine in a bottle.
Don't give it to the albatross, but he does love it.
And if you do...
I mean, if you want to get there a little faster...
Right. You know, and if you make it to LA alive, we'll put you in an apartment and give you $50 a week to see how things go over here at Preferred Pictures. And they already had her first role all lined up. There was a movie they were doing called Maytime, directed by Louis Gasnier.
Oh.
Remember that guy?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Yes. Yes, you do. You do remember it.
Who's old Louis G?
He directed Reefer Madness.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's right. Okay.
And we did a whole episode about that guy. I don't blame you for not remembering.
Yeah,
I hardly remember.
I don't remember most things we talk about.
No, me neither, man.
Who's James Cagney?
We throw it out in the ether and we let it go, baby. It's like our children.
I can't wait till we do that Cagney episode. I've been hearing so much about it.
Really, it's great. 1,000 listens.
Whoa,
Cagney Part One.
And what's funny is like we weren't even in our swing and like in our rhythm or in our stride.
No way, dude.
So like the first episode was like us getting into it, and I'm like,
but it's good.
Yeah, it holds up.
Listen to it. It holds up. It's fucking good, man.
It's like fine wine, you know?
Yeah,
that's right. Ages well.
They got this movie all lined up that they're doing called Maytime. Louis Gasnier. It's all about incest. It's just like generations of cousins fucking. Like, so
she was typecast again.
Yeah, she's typecast again. We're going to share
this movie about family members fucking family members? I think you'd be great for it.
I think you'd be great for it. We're going to pay you $50 a week to do it if you survive the plane to LA.
You've got a pain in your eye that we recognize.
We think you've had sex with family before. So we want to bring you to act like you did.
I'm trying to work through my traumas and get paid for it, okay?
That's exactly what we're doing here, Clara. We're going to give you some free therapy. We're going to pay you for it, as a matter of fact.
Nope, we're actually going to torture you mentally on screen so you can deliver the best performance of
pain. Once again, man, method acting. Is it destroying humans? Absolutely. But do we get Oscar-worthy performances out of it? Make me an artist.
Yeah, you know, but actors aren't human.
So. Yeah.
We haven't. You're going to win an Oscar for this. What's that? We haven't invented it yet, but when we do, you're going to win one.
Yeah, when you guys get too yappy, we're going to invent an award to give to you to justify all the torment that we put you through, you know?
So, who's this guy named Oscar? Why are you trying to set me up with him?
Well, it's actually Louis B. Mayer, and you're going to meet him at the couch out back. He's the guy who invented the Oscar. So, in July of 1923, Luella Parsons of the New York Morning Telegraph issued a press release that New York's own 18-year-old Clara Bow had inked a contract and was headed for Hollywood. She wrote, "She is refreshingly unaffected, as if she had never faced a means to pretend. She hasn't any secrets from the world. She trusts everyone. She is almost too good to be true. I only wish some reformer who believes the screen contaminates all who associate with it could meet this child. Still, on second thought, it might not be safe. Claire uses a dangerous pair of eyes."
What?
So...
That was a whole nonsense paragraph.
"It's not safe to meet this child because she'll seduce you with her eyes."
That is what this woman is saying. This woman is saying 18-year-old Clara Bow is coming over here. She means business. She's a great actress. But also, she is going to get fucking railed by every producer in town. That's what she just said.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And you know, she interviews Claire for this magazine. And that was what she surmised. Was this girl is great, but she's going to be turned out, you know. So by the way, they became longtime friends after this interview.
Like, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, Clara Bow and Luella Parsons became longtime friends after this interview. Hopefully she looked after Clara, maybe just a little bit. No.
She wants to watch the train wreck. That's why she's saying this shit.
Yeah, she gets more content. Clara leaves New York. She's like, "Fuck this. I'm going to Hollywood, baby." Nice. "They're going to put me on a tin can and fly me out there."
Hell yeah.
She left.
Love albatrosses.
Loved it. She's hopping on an albatross. She's headed her way to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And she left her father, her rapey father behind, and her boyfriend, by the way.
Oh, yeah, cameraman?
Yeah, the cameraman. They did not have a very long...
Yeah, she was cheating on him anyway.
Yeah, she was definitely going to cheat on him. Or already. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Who?
That's like being a groupie in a band and hooking up with, like, the sound guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, of course you're always going to stray from that. Yeah. You're just using that as, like, you know, way to be on set.
He was cute. No. He was cute. But, you know, I got better things to do.
Yeah.
So she leaves, and Preferred Pictures appointed. And so it was this writer agent lady, Maxine Alton. And they basically put Maxine on babysitting duty. Like,
a 1920s studio woman named Maxine.
Maxine Alton. And her job was to go to New York and hop on the plane with Clara to come back to L.A. and move in the apartment with her. Because she's an 18-year-old fucking New York kid, and we know she's going to go nuts as soon as she gets here. So Maxine was like, "Okay, I'll make sure that she doesn't die." You know, Clara later labeled Maxine as a fucking liar and never really expounded upon why. She just did not like this lady at all.
Her fucking RA in college.
Yeah, her college RA, exactly. Yeah. She fucking hates this lady. In late July, Bow entered studio chief B.P. Schulberg's office of Preferred Pictures wearing a simple high school uniform in which she had won several gold medals on the old cinder track. Remember the cinder track?
Oh, yeah.
The cinder track days? So she wore her high school track uniform with her medals on it into this test. And B.P. Schulberg was like, "Oh, yeah, I like this. I like this. Bring in the money man."
I am the money man.
Yeah. Bring me in. Put me in, coach.
He's just talking to himself. She's like, "Are you okay?" He's like, "I'm a little schizophrenic."
"Oh, a little crazy. You're going to find out." Bring in the money man. And then he walks out of the room and comes back in. He's like, "The money man is here. BP is daddy now." So after a screen test, Bow was signed on Preferred Pictures. So you remember, she's coming down here for a 3-week contract, $50 a week. It's supposed to be a probationary thing. She goes into his office. Like I said, I'm not saying anything.
She was dressed like a schoolgirl.
She was dressed like a schoolgirl. She goes in his office. She comes out with a permanent contract to Preferred Pictures. Not a 3-week probationary contract. She is there forever. She is cemented in Preferred Pictures history now. Again, I don't know how.
Must be a fucking great lay. Like, say what you will, but that woman.
She puts up convincing arguments.
Probably amazing in bed.
Yep. She has a way with words. Mm. No doubt about it.
I don't think words really played a factor.
Like I said. You know, I just did a voice. I didn't say anything.
No one knows what happens behind those doors.
That's right. That's damn right.
At least two people at one point knew what happened behind those doors.
Yeah. So she and that fucking liar, Maxine Alton, were putting an apartment together, the Hillview, over by Hollywood Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So you know how Keith's building is like a TikTok building?
Yeah.
This building was for 18-year-old actresses.
Nice.
Yeah, this was for...
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Back in the day, this was the you know, the Vine Star apartment building, or the Oaks, where all the child actors live up there on fucking by Universal in the Valley.
Incredible.
And where all the momagers live.
Sounds like so much cocaine.
Yeah, the Hillview was the hype house of the silent
film era. Fuck yeah. Nice. Okay. Yeah, dude.
And it was. It was a fucking party. It was. You were not wrong. It was like cocaine, fucking, you know.
Heroin, reefer. Heroin.
Yes. All the above. There would be like, you know, girls who were flappers and jazz and drugs and actresses and artists.
Cigarettes, booze, weed, and heroin and blow.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Whatever, and it was,
whatever you want.
This apartment building was owned by studio executives who would put all their talent there so they could, like, pull them off the shelf and dry them off to go do a day of work at the studio.
Yeah.
You know, we know where these people are. They're all in one place. Yeah, at least we know their address.
Yeah,
you
know? It's like, you're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. We need them to cry on camera tomorrow.
As long as there's enough cocaine in that house, they're not leaving it.
Yeah.
So, it's my job to put cocaine on the plate to keep them right where they are.
The fucking Hillview, baby.
Now, do you think they were doing adrenochrome in the early 20s, or did that come later?
Claire Bow was doing her own adrenochrome.
She's harvesting it from herself and redoing.
She would scare herself.
That bad of a bitch?
She would scare herself in the mirror and then dig it out of her neck and fucking snort that shit.
She just had one of those slinky straws from the soda pop shop.
She'd look at a picture of her dad and then fucking slinky straw that shit right out of her neck.
Is that apartment building still here, Hillview?
Let me see what it became. I'm sure.
A brothel.
Do we have an address?
Let me see. A brothel? It is now a whorehouse. It is, yes, so now it is called the Hudson Hollywood Apartments. It's at 6533 Hollywood Boulevard. It's right down the street.
I know exactly what fucking apartment building this is.
Really?
I tried to get in there. It's like, it's so hard to get into that place.
Dude.
Yeah, I almost live there.
You got to be a silent film actor.
It's you know where No Vacancy is?
Yeah.
It's the one right there.
No way. It's like right here.
Yeah, where Black Rabbit Rose is the bar.
Shit.
Black Rabbit Rose is the bar at the bottom. Yeah. And then like, yeah, No Vacancies behind it, along with Secret and Tequila.
That's so crazy,
and,
man.
Yeah.
That used to be the silent film young actor.
Yeah, yeah, because I think the Hillview sign is still on it. That's why I was like, where is that? Because I thought it was that spot. I've tried to get in there so many times because they are, believe it or not, they are the same price I'm paying for here.
Oh, shit.
But they have, like, actual, like, a dishwashers, and, like, they have, like, they renovated the place. Like, they're actually, like,
that
nice. They're nice apartments, but they are the same price as what I'm paying right now.
Damn.
But, yeah, there's, like, a massive wait list. It's, like, impossible to get into that place.
That'd be a great fucking movie about the Hillview. Just the Hillview, like a day at the Hillview would probably be an interesting story. Imagine this Maxine Alton lady from the studio. Alton, who had to stay there with Clara, and she's like the manager in the dirt for Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that's her. She's like definitely like trying to keep this girl alive while she's fucking living in like the young party apartment.
Imagine if I had gotten into that apartment we were recording at the Hillview.
That would be nuts. We'd be like, we're here.
We look it up, we figured out that we're here.
We're in Claribo's apartment.
Yeah.
There's still some of like her juices around here. And that's where I'm gonna end you.
Okay.
In part
all right.
two.
Yeah.
That's where I'm gonna leave you on part two.
Right at the Hillview.
Right at the Hillview, and we're gonna begin part three, and now we're gonna talk about fucking Hollywood Claribo.
Nice.
Hollywood Claribo.
Nice.
This is where it all really gets
two blocks
off.
Down the street.
That's right. Two blocks down the street. This girl is going to become literally the it girl as she fucking coined the phrase.
Until we revisit this topic, if you would like to follow my Hollywood adventures, right, you can follow me at Hollywood Drake on TikTok, at Drake L. Cummings on TikTok, and just Draking Around also on TikTok.
Nice, bro.
Or on my Instagram at Drake L. Cummings or YouTube at Drake Cummings.
Yes.
Find me at Sailor_Dev on Insta and AbracadabraDev on Twitter.
Very nice. Okay, so you can find me at James Wyatt Scott or Jimmy DeLoy, depending on where you're looking for me. Film History, The History of Film, FHHF Podcast, depending on where you're looking for that shit.
You can also find us at Patreon at patreon.com. Film History, History of Film.
Yes.
If you type in a combination of Patreon and Film History, I'm sure you'll find us.
Trust me, you'll get your worth out of it.
There is currently a outtakes compilation that goes up every month.
Yeah.
And then also, whenever we can find some fun bits, we do a little fun bit that didn't make it into the episode.
Also, I got a new show.
Ah.
I got to plug a new show. I just started a show with Shelby Scott from Scare You to Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also a historic-based show. The show is called Historic Hangouts. There's two episodes out already wherever you listen to podcasts. And it is basically, we take historic buildings and we tell you what happened there.
Cool.
And we tell you, we got one out about Musso and Frank's, or Musso and Frank is what it's really called. And I take you all the way back to when it was open, and Charlie Chaplin is racing horses down Hollywood Boulevard with his friends, and then we did a sort of a zag on it, and I did the Green Dragon Tavern in Boston, which was like the headquarters of the Revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Samuel Adams.
On the Freedom Trail, right?
Yeah, on the Freedom Trail. It was where the Sons of Liberty planned the Revolution.
I did an American thing there when I was 16. I was in Boston, and I walked in there with a fake ID and ordered a beer on a school field trip.
That's fucking awesome, dude. That's about
it. It felt very rebel.
Absolutely. George Washington would be damn proud of that, for sure. And old Johnny Hancock.
You did your country proud, brother.
Yeah. That's right.
It was more like a Sam Adams and a drunken son of liberty. But
you gotta order a Sam Adams there. That's where Sam Adams did his whole thing.
That's where
he really was.
That's where he was doing the whole Sammy
thing.
That's
right. He was doing the whole Sammy thing. I make a joke about it on the show that you can hear if you go listen to it. Historic Hangouts.
Nice.
And you can also find me growing up to be a woman whaler. I don't care what Dad says. And that's been Film History.
The history of film.
You know what I'm talking about.